I think that people are trying to manage their way out of where we're at rather than lead their way out. And unfortunately, leading is a very different thing that a lot of organizations haven't supported because it's risky, it's unknown, it's you may fail. One person I worked with said it's like jumping off a cliff and hoping that the parachute opens. And most organizations are not designed for that. They're designed for certainty.
Hey, it's Nikki Llewellyn Gregory, and you're on Gut Plus Science. You're in for a fast-paced, storytelling, action item-rich leadership growth experience. I hope you make this podcast a habit. I consider it a leadership mentoring tool. Learning together makes us better together, and that is how we change the world around us. Let's get to it. Hey, Gut Plus Science listeners, I have a pretty incredible guest here with me today to talk about employee experience, where it came from, and how to get it right. This guy was recognized as a top 50 most influential people in tacit knowledge management. He's a social innovator, author, educator, and transformation catalyst. So, Josh, welcome to the show. Before we go any further, please tell us your background with employee experience.
Well, Nikki, it actually started in about 2014. I was working for a consultant for the U.S. government, and Obama wanted to change the citizen experience in terms of customer service. And so I actually came up with this concept of citizen experience, blending together user experience and design thinking and customer service. Well, soon after that, I came up with the idea of why don't we apply this to employees? Because I'm more interested in employees at the time than I was even in just the citizen. And so back in 2015, I started experimenting with it and came up with a concept. I wrote a white paper for the government, then looked at publishing it and tried to go to a big journal here in the US. They didn't understand it. It was a little ahead of its time. So I went to England and published it there. And I've been doing it ever since, and it's been quite a journey of developing this whole concept and what it's about.
Wow. So basically, guys, we have like the godfather of employee experience with us right now. So I'm only going to get to cover so much, but we're going to give you Josh's information so that you can reach out and follow up with all the questions that I don't ask or get to cover today. But Josh, I would love for you to share the difference between employee engagement and employee experience, particularly because I think a lot of people use them interchangeably and they're two different things.
Really, if you think about it, employee engagement is a result that you want. The employee experience is the way to get that result. And what I focus on is really designing the employee experience. It's basically the engagement is how you get people to be more actively involved, more connected with the organization, and participating in the organization. And the experience is the totality of all of their connection and all of the relationships that leads to that. If it's a poor employee experience overall, you're probably not going to get very good engagement. But if it's a really good experience and people feel that they're part of the organization and they're part parcel of designing the organization, then they're much more likely to be engaged. And so it's not something that engagement a lot of times is just how do we reward people for participating or how we push them to participate. But it's a bigger, bigger thing than that. And the employee experience is kind of the way to get that.
So employee engagement is the outcome and employee experience is the journey or the actions that we're taking every day to get to that outcome.
Exactly. Exactly.
Awesome. Thanks for that. Now let's talk about the gap in understanding of employee experience. And let's start at the macro level. So from concept, from high level, like what is that that most people are not understanding or truly grasping?
Yeah, so this is the challenge because it really requires a totally different way of thinking than we're used to. And so what I've seen is a lot of people sort of put what I call old wine into new bottles. They basically take the same way we've been thinking about human resources and about organizations and just adding a spin on it to say, oh, let's have dogs come to work and let's funify the workplace and that will lead to the great employee experience. But really, it's a completely different change of thinking. And so I see that there are three shifts really that have to happen. One is a shift from the thinking of the organization and the people in it from a structural point of view or a thing point of view to a relational point of view. So relational means that relationships come first and the things and the structures come second. So if you think about it, it's thinking about the relationship between the leaders and the employees, the employees and the vision, the employees and the purpose, and their own work. the relationship between the organization and the community. So it's shifting from this structural, how do we organize things physically, to how do we actually change the relationships? So that's the first shift. The second shift is from what I will call behavioral cognitive thinking to phenomenological thinking. Okay, cognitive and behavioral thinking is what we're used to, which is we basically think about how do we get people to do what we want them to do. It leads to command and control kind of work. And cognitive is thinking about people as computers, that basically they're just programmable. And what we can do is kind of train them to be programmable. Phenomenological is directly related to direct experience. So the experience is a total immersion of the human being, body, mind, heart, all of those together, that's on a constant changing pathway. And this is a totally different way of thinking than we're used to. We're used to breaking things up into pieces and looking at thing individual pieces and how we put them together. But this is a much more holistic way of thinking. You have to think of all the things together and how they impact each other. And then the third shift is moving from a leader-created kind of world to a co-created world. This is a really difficult shift because leaders like to go, and I've seen this with COVID, where leaders go into a room and say, we're going to have workers come 3 days a week. And they don't engage the employees, except for maybe a survey, in thinking about how do we actually co-create the workplace? How do we work together to find a whole new way of working? So there's a totally different way of relationship between the leaders and the employees in terms of creating the workplace. So those are the really three critical shifts, which involves empathy, it involves dialogue, it involves a whole different way of relating with each other. And that's where the misunderstanding is, because it's still kind of going back to, well, we're going to think for our employees and decide for them what we think is important. And we may do a survey, but that's about as deep as we go. It requires much more depth than that.
This is really good. Really good. So relationships are the top priority. It's like, you know, when we say like people first at my company, People Forward Network, we're really focused on people first. We call it people forward, you know, so that's one of the takeaways here from a macro perspective. Number two is this phenomenal logic, which is thinking holistically, right? So we're thinking about all of the parts together. This is our ideal way from a thinking standpoint to be a great leader of employee experience. And then finally, co-creation. It's the key to employee experience, meaning that the leaders and the employees are creating the solutions or the pathways together.
Yes. And phenomenological is experiential. That's what's key, a direct experience. There's a Zen story that I like to tell about it, where two monks are going over a bridge. And one monk asks the other monk how deep the river is that's below them. And the other monk pushes him in. And it says at the end of the story, and he was enlightened. And basically what that story is saying is you can't experience depth unless you're in the water, treading the water, keeping your head above it, feeling that there's no bottom beneath your feet. If you think about being in the deep end of the water when you went into the pool, that first time, that was an experience. Just looking at the side of the pool and saying, oh, it's 8 feet deep or 10 feet deep is not experiencing it. Giving somebody a measuring rod and saying, how deep is it? That's not the same thing. But being pushed in and floating in the water and having that fear and the courage and the relationship with the water. That's what we're talking about when we talk about experience.
That's a great analogy. You can't experience depth unless you are in the water. Yeah. So Josh, I think we've touched on this a little bit, but let's just have you expand on anything that, you know, this could be helpful for someone that's listening to just kind of go through and do like a little quick checklist of reflection, I guess. Tell us what employee experience is not.
What I've seen a lot of people do, particularly with COVID, is let's just give some perks to people. Let's give them free lunches. Let's give them free ice cream. Have an ice cream social. Give them swag. Those are maybe parts of the employee experience. They may contribute to the employee experience. But if that's all you're focusing on, then that's not the employee experience. That gets old. The employee experience is much broader than that and deeper than that, and it addresses meaning. And so what a lot of times organizations do is they don't think about meaning and they don't empathize with the employees and engage the employees. So, you know, second thing is leaders making all the decisions by themselves with very little data and saying, this is what we're going to decide for the organization. But we've taken the employee into consideration here. That's also not really fully following employee experience. And the other is making assumptions about employees that all employees are the same and kind of treating them all as equal in terms of their reactions to things or the type of experience that they want. It's hard in a large company to be able to address each individual person, but there are ways that you can make that intangible tangible, that there is a way to actually address different types of people, different ways of thinking while you're doing the design. And so if you're doing a one-size-fits-all kind of design, you're really not following employee experience either.
So employee experience is not tactical, basically, like perks. Perks can be part of employee experience, but perks aren't the strategy. They are not a standalone solution. And then employees are humans, and every human is unique. We can't build a one-size-fits-all solution to drive employee growth and outcomes when all people are different. You have different generations. You have different come-froms, backgrounds. That's such a great point. Thank you. Those are both great points. Thank you. You might have touched on this already, but I want to tie it together in this like one piece here. What is most important when it comes to mindset and core principles? So thinking about the foundation that employee experience is built on, like what is that, you know, Maslow's hierarchy type thing? Like what is the foundation of building in a great employee experience?
So first of all, you know, let me start with what I consider a definition of employee experience, because I think that's important. And then I'll go to six principles that I think are the things you need to follow. So the definition that I created said, it's the employee's holistic perceptions of the relationship with his or her employing organization derived from all the encounters at touch points along the employee's journey. Right. So there's some unpacking this. One, it's about holistic perceptions. So understanding the broad perceptions, and perceptions are different, and perceptions are loaded with history, with emotions, with fears, with hopes. So that's critical. The relationship, again, we're going back to relationships. It's not about the things, it's about the relationships. It's about the connections in between, the space in between these relationships. It's encounters. All of life is an encounter or a meeting. You never have an I alone. It's always an I that's connected to something. So those encounters or touch points, the touch points are anything that they have in connection with that journey. And it could be media, it could be the culture, it could be friends, it could be anything. And those touch points have some critical either a way of reinforcing the journey, and it's a long journey. It happens before they start with the company, and it starts and it ends. It never really ends, because once they leave, it's not done, because they're still carrying with them the experience. So if you think about it now, there are six principles that go along with this. One, you have to deeply understand people and their needs, not just do a survey. Actually empathize with them, find out what they're feeling, what they're fearing, what's meaningful for them, to really truly understand what makes them tick and why they're doing what they're doing, and how do you find a sense of purpose and meaning for them so that they can grab onto that meaning and that purpose, which that will actually motivate them and push them along. It's not about, you know, again, gift cards and things like that. It's about meaning. It's about finding purpose and significance in the work. The second principle is to embrace expansive and holistic thinking. Again, how do you think more broadly? Instead of breaking things up into pieces to figure out how they work, we have to put things together to figure out what they mean. And so constantly, how do you look at the whole system, the whole journey, and not in little pieces, but the whole thing together holistically? It's a really difficult thing for us to do, but we need to do more of that. The third thing is to make the intangible tangible. So experience is intangible. You can't describe it. If you've had one of those awing experiences, there's no way to put it into words. There just isn't. So somehow we have to make those tangible. And there are different tools, different like mapping processes and empathy maps and things like that that will help to at least try to surface some of those. And dialogue does that. That's what conversations are about. Unfortunately, we've moved away from conversations because we want everything in a little soundbite. But dialogue is really, really critical. The fourth thing is to insist on radical participation. This doesn't mean providing a survey for people. This means actually engaging lots of people into talking and to thinking together, into to working together to find co-solutions with things. The fifth thing is to iterate and experiment. You're not going to get it right the first time. You just got to keep moving along, trying new things, learning from those things, expanding on those things. So sort of agile types of approaches rather than these large 6-month, 12-month kinds of programs. You've got to actually build them slowly over a piece of time, over a period of time, and virally spread them to some extent over the organization. And then the last thing is you just have to trust and appreciate the process. This is not a standard process. This is a different kind of process. And so you have to trust that this process will get there. You have to trust your employees and your leadership that they can work together, that they can figure some things out. And you have to enable them and entrust in them and engage them in that process. And so those, to me, are the six principles that are critical. They're not easy. But if you do them, and I've done them with some companies and I've seen them work, some amazing things do happen.
Thank you so much for that overview. So I'm going to make sure that I got them right. And then we'll be linking these out into the show notes. And because there's so much here, this is why you want to reach out to Josh yourself, because there's so much in this and he's doing a great job of summarizing. So building a deep connection to truly understand the employee and what makes them tick, or finding their meaning and purpose, embracing holistic thinking, making the intangible tangible, radical participation, iterating and experimenting, taking an agile approach, and then trusting the process.
Yes. Yep.
Great. Love it. Okay. Thank you so much for those. We'll probably have to have you back so that we can like dig into these even more.
Deep dives.
Yeah. I know that I want to cover, because so many people ask us at People Forward Network to make sure that we're touching on the future of work when we have like exceptional thought leaders with us. Talk about the future of work and the important message that leaders must know in this realm of employee experience. Like, there are probably some things that it's like, hey, if you've not jumped on this train, you better do it soon, because it's just, you just have to. And then, hey, here's some things that are coming that maybe you haven't even heard of. Like, just give us the important things about the future of work, particularly remote work as well, that we just need to be taking into consideration.
One of my students and I just published a paper that we looked at kind of the post-pandemic world and what's going on. And actually, I'm pretty concerned about where things are going, because things have changed irrevocably after COVID. And I don't think people are realizing it. I think they're thinking it's going to go back to the way it was, and it's not. We called it post-pandemic organizational psychosis. Not psychosis as a derogatory thing, but psychosis meaning that they're seeing a reality that is not there. The reality is that things have changed, that remote work is now part and parcel of how work happens, and that the cultures that existed in brick and mortar organizations have been torn apart, and they're not going to just weave themselves magically back together by ordering people back to work 3 days a week. It's just not going to happen. And so we have to look at things very, very differently. Now, the challenge here is that not everything can be remote. I mean, in my experience, when you do like a design session, when we do employee experience work, a lot of it needs to be done in person. You have to be together. You have to throw around ideas, because there's some of those things about experience that you can't capture remotely. It's difficult to capture those things remotely. But there are other times where things can be remote. And so what we have to do is spend a lot more time thinking about how do we, it's not an either or, it's a both and. And how do we actually decide? And this is one of the, again, the challenging thinking of that we have, is we think a lot in either or frames. It's either this or it's this. It's either this or it's this. But we're not taught to think both and thinking, which is it's both this and this. And sometimes those conflict with each other. And that's okay. So we have to think about how to deal with it. So how we work in terms of remote and when we work in terms of remote should be a conversation that happens between the employees and the leadership and the organization. And how do you optimize that for the best? And I don't think too many people have figured it out. I think it's so new that everyone's trying to figure it out, and they're trying to mandate things as opposed to figuring it out together to say, when is it appropriate and when is it not appropriate? And how do we talk through it so that people do understand that there are times where you do have to get there, and there are times where you don't. The way that you lead is going to be very, very different as well in terms of remote work. Actually, what was interesting is that during COVID, the job satisfaction shot up tremendously. Now it's going back down. Part of that, I think, is because the communication between leaders and employees was different. It was actually a very focused kind of communication, rather than feeling like that employees were being controlled or being monitored, like sometimes people feel when they're in the workplace. So it's changed the way the communication is happening too, in terms of how and when we talk to each other, and how and when leaders intervene and when they don't intervene. So it's going to create a new need for a sense of trust in employees and a new sense of connection and relationship, again, between the employee and the organization. So to me, and I'm biased, employee experience, I think, is the way to figure this out. I don't think that people are using tools that are appropriate to figure this out. I think they're guessing, and they're trying to kind of use quote unquote evidence-based sort of stuff, but we don't have a lot of evidence. And I think there's a lot of wisdom behind this rather than just evidence. I think it takes some human thinking and some intuitions and some relationship building to figure some of this stuff out. That's not just what does the research say. I think it has to do with the connections between people. I also teach the next generation. And I'll tell you, they're in a different place. They think very differently about work, about what they want, about they're much more tech savvy than we are. And so that's another thing to think about is, you know, when the next generations come in, are we going to have them conform to old ways of working, or are we going to take some of the good stuff that's from that generation and merge it with some of the good stuff that's from previous generation? And how do we figure out how to optimize that rather than say, again, it's an either or? It's not an either or, it's a both and.
Yep. I think you are so right. Remote work is here to stay, and it can make us all so much better. My company has been a remote work company since we started. And we get to live a work-life integration experience together, and we celebrate that. I think many times about my old life. I mean, I've been working remote way before this company started, but I do remember the days of a lot of travel time, a lot of just wasted meetings in conference rooms. And we just have reworked how we work. And the work-life integration experience is like, I am celebrating my team if they take a nap in the middle of the day. I am celebrating them if when they get done in the, you know, off work at night, if they're ready to be with their family versus like got to travel or, you know, travel home or not, you know, you can throw lunch in between breaks and, you know, not have to be cooking and taking time away from your loved ones. Like work-life integration is an amazing thing. And I just really advocate for it. And I think here's the problem. And I know you alluded to this. Leaders need to put in the work. They need to learn. You know, basically like the command and control was managing, and this is leading. Leading is influence, right? And so remote work teaches leaders, if you embrace it, how to truly lead and not manage. And it's like clarity, role clarity, regular check-ins and relationship building time, so that it's like the best word I can put with it, Josh, is employee ownership. Whether you're a ESOP or not, I'm saying the employee owns their role and owns this experience, and it goes right in with your co-creation thing.
I agree with you. I would change the word. I don't like the word ownership. I like the word stewardship, because ownership always implies that it's about me and mine. But stewardship means that it's ours. But I agree with you 100%. I think that people are trying to manage their way out of where we're at rather than lead their way out. And unfortunately, leading is a very different thing that a lot of organizations haven't supported because it's risky, it's unknown, you may fail. You're like jumping off. I heard one person I worked with said it's like jumping off a cliff and hoping that the parachute opens. And most organizations are not designed for that. They're designed for certainty. They're designed for measurement and metrics. And there are no metrics and measurements that you can do for some of this stuff. And also COVID, almost everyone was touched by somebody or something that had to do with COVID. And so people's views of life and work are different now. They're reprioritizing life and work and the place of life and work. And so if we ignore that and just say, well, we're just going to go back to work as primary and everything else is secondary, we're mistaken, because that's not how people are thinking anymore. It's not the same thing.
And good for everyone not thinking that. If you're on that train, I applaud you. That's awesome. So Josh, the next question that I'm going to ask could open up a can of worms, probably to talk for a very long time because there's so many options here. So I'm going to challenge you to give us the Cliff Notes version because we got to head over to our lightning round in a minute. But when you think about technology, our tech stack that ties into employee experience, help us understand, especially with the future of work or like what you're seeing now, like what do we consider with the technologies that help us to do this?
Yeah. So I was a tech guy for a long time. I did artificial intelligence back in the 80s, and I kind of moved to the people side of things. And I am not a Luddite. I don't think that technology shouldn't play a role. I think technology, and it's again, technology is an assistant. It's an augmentation of human life. It's not human life itself. And so it's a tool, and it's merely a tool. What I usually tell my clients is thinking that the computer is going to solve your business problems is like thinking that the telephone is going to solve your marital problems. It's not about the technology. It's about the relationships again. So we're back to the relationships. So to me, again, the relationships are primary, and then the technology are tools for assisting in those relationships. Now, there are different tools that you can use for looking at employee experience. Obviously, you know, doing crowdsourcing and those kinds of things using technology, especially for a large organization, is really, really helpful because you want to get multiple voices in and you can't fly everybody into a location to get them involved in a conversation. It's not necessarily ideal. A lot of times you do want to have people together, seeing each other, meeting with each other, eating with each other. That facilitates much more dialogue and much more depth. But you're obviously limited in terms of money and in terms of time and everything else. So how can you use tools to do that? Well, there's a lot of crowdsourcing kinds of software and tools that you can use to facilitate those conversations, design tools that you can use like Mural and some of these, whiteboarding and design thinking kinds of tools. But you are limited to some extent, and you don't want to eliminate people because you don't have the ability to bring people together. So how do you blend those things together where you can have in-person and you can have technology? I worry a little bit about artificial intelligence. I think we rely a little bit too much on it. Artificial intelligence does not have the intuition and creativity that human beings do. So I think we have to be careful about thinking about what role it will play. I don't think you can feed it in and say, well, create a great employee experience for us, because it can't empathize. It cannot feel. It cannot connect in the same way that a human being can. And so I think that's something I would be very, very cautious about. And I think we need to think very carefully about.
We are running up against time. So before we hop over to our lightning round, can you give a shout out to one company or, set of leaders that they're just doing this so well, and just tell us illustrate for us how they're doing what they're doing.
So the one that stands out for me actually was an experiment that I did with a president of a company. It was a financial company. They wanted to address the employees and kind of where they were at. They were trying to kind of rebuild the culture. And what we ended up doing, which I thought was brave, very courageous, the leadership team actually allowed the employees to create the purpose and the values for the organization and not the leadership. So we actually facilitated conversations with the employees, all the employees, it was about a 500-person company, to create the purpose, what the whole purpose of this organization is, why it exists in the first place. And then the employees created the values, and then the values were pushed up and the purpose was pushed up to the leaders, and the leaders then led to those values and to that purpose. And I'll tell you, the feeling of the organization completely changed. The performance of the organization completely changed. The retention of the organization completely changed. And to talk to people, and I still talk to people from the organization, this was work we did about, I don't know, three, four years ago, they're still talking about it. They're still involved. They're still engaged in it. Really, it really had a huge impact on everything, including the redesign work that they had to do in terms of functions and processes and everything else. So that to me was sort of really trusting the process and really handing over the engagement and radically involving the employees in the process. That to me was just an incredible experience for me, an incredible experience for that leader, and an incredible experience for the organization.
So Josh, we need to head over to our lightning round where we get to learn a little bit more about you. And I'm really excited about these questions that I've got for you. So the one that I always ask is, if you had to pick one book and it was your favorite of all time or a favorite recent read that you want to share with our audience, encourage them to read this book, what is it?
Okay, so I have a lot of books, but I love Moby Dick. I know people hate it, but I love the book. It taught me a lot reading it. And so it also put my son to sleep when he was a little baby when I read it to him. So that was a good thing also.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. And can you tell us about your connection to Shakespeare?
Yeah, so I actually studied Shakespeare with Patrick Stewart, Captain Picard, in London, Stratford. I also played a dead body for Ian McKellen one time, which was exciting.
This is just too much. That is so cool. I have a feeling that people are going to reach out to you and that's how they're going to lead their conversation. Tell me more. That's so cool. Okay. And then, you know, you and I were talking prior and we said something about like traveling or whatever. And I learned a little bit more about your background with beaches. And I will have to say I'm very jealous. Tell us about beaches, like the actual beach and how they are part of your story.
So I grew up in Malibu, California, which is a beach town, a surfer town, and my house overlooked the ocean and I could hear the waves and it just gets into your blood and it's, you can't describe it. And so I try to be near water anytime I can, even though I live in Indiana in the middle of the state with no water around me. I will gravitate toward water every time that I need to go somewhere or want to go somewhere. I need to be near water. And it just relaxes me and kind of rejuvenates me.
Yeah. There's something about water. It's just so grounding and healing. I am curious from you. What is your, if you were to say, okay, I want to go to like a favorite beach coming up. We're going to go there. Like you and your wife or your family. What is that favorite beach?
Well, I went to Maui and Kaanapali Beach was gorgeous. I mean, it really was. I would say going back to Hawaii and the beaches of Hawaii.
That's awesome. Okay, just because I'm a beach person, now I have one more question for you before we get to the wrap-up question. Okay, bucket list beach, bucket list.
Believe it or not, it's not a traditional beach, but the coast of Maine. It's not a layout beach, but just the waves crashing against the mountains. And I've always wanted to go there and just listen to the water and, you know, the kind of that dramatic sort of, beaches that I've heard about there, or not beaches, but the dramatic seaside, I guess. I've always wanted to go there and I've never been.
That's cool. Yeah. I've had Maine on my bucket list too. And then I forget about it. So I'm like, I need to just write this up on my wall so I remember and I get my butt to Maine. Awesome. Josh, this has been so great. Can you let our listeners know how to get in touch with you or any next steps to connect with you further?
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to connect with me, I have a company called Interhuman Group. You can get me at josh@interhuman-group.com. I also have a website. I'm building it out more. That's probably the best way to get in contact with me.
Josh Plaskoff, you have so much insight. For years, you've been working on employee experience and wow, it shows. Thank you so much for your time today. We really filled this episode. And here's my truth you can act on. Employee experience defined is the employee's holistic perceptions of the relationship with all encounters of the journey. I like it. Number two, employee experience and employee engagement are two different things. Employee engagement is the outcome. And employee experience is the journey or the actions. Number three, phenomenal logical is the ideal way to think about employee experience. We think holistically. You can't experience depth unless you're in the water, to Josh's example today. I love that. All right. Co-creation is key to employee experience, meaning the leaders and the employees create solutions or pathways together. Number five, employees are humans and every human is unique, as we know. And we can't build one-size-fits-all solutions to drive employee growth and outcomes. So how do we scale the ability to tap into each individual unique employee with our systems? That's the challenge and the question. And lots to take away today from what we learned with Josh. But here are the six principles to apply. Build a deep connection to truly understand the employee and what makes them tick. Embrace holistic thinking. Make the intangible tangible. Create radical participation. Iterate and experiment, taking an agile approach, and trust the process. Great six principles to apply. Josh, so much good today. Hey, Gut Plus Science listeners, if you've got further questions on your employee experience, you know, strategy or journey, please reach out to Josh. He's a wealth of information and very available on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time. We just left the world a little bit better. Now, go do something with it.